Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Board, it was always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex, sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face,
your
face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching. Cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the
education. Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Here with my co-host, the Michael Phelps of education policy, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, babe?
I'm well. So have you been following the Olympic coverage?
Oh, we've been watching some, to my surprise.
I know, because the other day you said that you don't like the Olympics. I found that to be somewhat unpatriotic and similar to your statement that you don't vote.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Rick, why should people pay any attention to you? You don't watch the Olympics and you don't vote. I mean, come on. What kind of American are you?
Well, you know,
I mean, why don't you just go over there and start working for Vladimir Putin while you're at it? You know, invade, you know, some country in the Caucasus. I mean, what's wrong with you? The Caucasus? In the Caucasus? Okay, in the Caucasus. In the Caucasus region? Is that? Yes.
It's the silent us.
All right, Rick, so what's wrong with you? You don't watch the Olympics. You don't vote. How do you explain this?
You know, Gene Weingarten wrote this great piece in the Washington Post, about 3 months ago, one of his extended pieces. And he spent it 24 hours locked up with the news channels and with pundit websites and with radio talk shows. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he made the point that so much of what, you know, we're enormously informed and enormously connected. And what happens is everybody winds up thinking and talking the same ways. You're on this side and everybody shares the same argument, mm-hmm. or you're on that side and everybody shares the same argument.
Okay.
I think one of the values that I can provide is by trying to remain at arm's distance from all of the fuss and all the furor and all of this side and all of that side, is at least I could try to look at these things in a way that makes sense to me and maybe not just rehash what everybody else has already said.
Wait. Are we talking about voting or the Olympics?
Yes.
I'm talking about the Olympics.
I'm talking about both, baby.
All right. Well, how about the Education Olympics? Have you been following that coverage?
Not as much.
Rick. Well, we made Rick watch some of our videos. For those of you that haven't joined in yet, go check it out. EdOlympics.net. Daily coverage of the Education Olympics from Beijing. And I don't want to break the surprise, but I got to tell you, the United States so far not doing well. It's been a total shutout, not a single medal yet.
Oof.
Yep. But Oof. The Finns, not the Checker Finns, but the other Finns, doing quite well.
But so Michael Phelps has himself outdistanced the entire U.S. team in the fake at Olympics.
Oh, by a long shot.
Oof.
Another mention of Michael Phelps, though. Did you know that his mother, Debbie Phelps, is a middle school principal?
Okay.
And the middle school that she runs in Baltimore County failed to make adequate yearly progress last year under No Child Left Behind.
Okay. Explain why this is interesting.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, because she raised this Olympic athlete, she's the most amazing Olympic athlete ever, I just think maybe she's going to be able to turn this school around, you know, because she's really obviously knows how to have a positive impact on
young
people's
lives. Did she just
become
principal at this new school?
Well, the school just opened in 2006. So
so she's been in charge for the 2 years?
Well, it's not quite clear. I'm not sure about that. But it looks like it
is. So that would be misplaced faith. If she's been its principal for these 2 years and it's a needs improvement school, your simple expectation that she will ratchet
it
forward.
Look, I'm just arguing that there might be a connection between raising an Olympian and turning around a failing school. I don't think it's all that far-fetched.
Okay.
You researchers, you can run some regressions on that. See how it goes. All right. Well, you're right. We got too much to do to just keep on talking, Kobe. That's why he rang the bell. We're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. We're going to hear our Research Minute with Amber Winkler, and we're going to hear some education news of the weird. So, Stafford, welcome to the show. Please get us started.
Thanks, Mike. Well, the new Education Next poll is out, and it shows that support for renewing NCLB with minor changes is down to 50% from 57% last year. And it also shows that the Democrats have opened up a big lead again on education. What does this imply about President Bush's education legacy?
Mike?
Rick? I think you should go first. Okay. I'm a little bit biased here. I was in the Bush administration, so, you know, fire away.
Right. In the 2000 election, one of the points that education observers have made for years is that Bush closed the gap with Al Gore on an issue on which Democrats had enjoyed a 30-40 point lead for a better part of a decade. And in an election as close as 2000, that was obviously critical. What's interesting is that after having narrowed that gap, after 8 years of the Bush presidency, boom, we are back about where we were in 1999. I think there's a couple of things to take away from here. One is that we know that pushing accountability plans is always more popular in the abstract than it is in reality. Mm-hmm. And the Bush administration certainly deserves some credit for having pushed on this and having stayed the course. On the other hand, a more skeptical view of this is one that this is partly the fruits of a package of reforms, which are not necessarily particularly coherent or well thought out. And two, anytime government does these large, ambitious social policies, you tend to have a lot of buyer's remorse on the back end, which is why the Republicans have done good for the past four decades until the Bush administration, leaving these kinds of things to the Democrats and eating the Democrats' lunch on this.
Yeah, but see, I don't. But Rick, the problem with your analysis is that what closed the gap in the first place was President Bush talking about this big, ambitious program. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's when Republicans don't talk about education at all that you tend to see these big gaps, or when they talk about things that are very abstract, like devolving power to the states or giving parents more choice.
Well, but he wasn't talking on the trail in 2000 about any particulars of what went. In fact, what he was talking about was his slender 24-page blueprint of a proposal which lacked a whole lot of what we've come to know and love as No Child Left Behind.
Yep. Well, one thing that's clear is that both parties, if they want to be competitive on this issue, have to put forward some sort of positive vision.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do so, you don't do so well in the polls.
So are you saying McCain hasn't yet put forward a positive vision?
This is a nonpartisan show, so I'm just leaving it at that.
Well, lucky for you, the next question's on this poll also. This same poll also indicates that Americans have more faith in their local police departments than their local public schools. Is this a clear shot across the bow at the Phi Delta Kappan, which has argued for years that Americans love their schools because they give them mostly A's and B's? What are we to make of this?
Well, let's be honest. Yes, it is a clear shot across the bow at the Phi Delta Kappan. You know, and because we have gotten these results forever, where Americans will say, yes, we really like our local public schools, but we're not as supportive of the public schools as a whole. We're worried about other kids' schools not being very good. But lo and behold, when you ask them, well, compare your public schools to your local post office or to your local police department, what do you find out? They say, well, actually, we don't like our public schools quite as much as those other local institutions. It really puts everything in context. And I think it illustrates that there is more unease out there, even about people's own local schools, than we otherwise thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think partly this shows the value of looking through the different end of the telescope. You look at this only in terms of schooling, you say, geez, 50, 60% of Americans give their local school an A or a B, the school their oldest child attends. You flip it around, says that sounds great. How do you like your schools compared to these other local community institutions? Suddenly you get a whole different story.
But tell me about this, Rick. I mean, we've always believed, or at least I've always believed, that it's very hard to rally middle class, upper middle class parents for school reform because they believe their own schools are doing fine. And if they didn't believe that, they would do something about it. They would move to another neighborhood. They would send their kid to private school. That if you have money and affluence, you can't allow yourself to believe that you're choosing to send your kid to a bad school and choosing to spend your money on something else.
Yeah, now that's, you know, that's a good point. I mean, one key here is how do we interpret these results? The fact that folks indicate a preference or more affection for their police department, say, doesn't necessarily mean that they think their schools are doing a bad job. Mm-hmm. It might mean that they recognize schools are more complicated, that they've got more confidence for whatever reason in police, but that doesn't necessarily mean that these same folks are waiting to go to the ramparts to fundamentally upend familiar schools.
One last thing, let me get this in, Kobe, is that fascinating African-American parents say particularly like their local police department a lot more than the local public schools. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Stafford.
Final question. Fordham is releasing a new book this week by David Whitman, which argues that KIPP, Amistad Academy, and other high-flying schools are successful because of a benign form of paternalism. They don't just do academics. They also try to change the very culture and behavior of their students. Is this thesis correct?
Yes. And, you know, I think my hat's off to Whitman, because one of the things we tend to run from in education policy is clarity and honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And these schools, in my experience, tend not to talk honestly about paternalism. They'll talk about culture, but they try to dress it up nice. And Whitman's saying, look, if we want to understand why these schools are successful, we can't just put a happy smiley face on the kind of very focused, very disciplined culture they're trying to construct. But we've got to understand that what they're trying to do, in fact, is create a culture that is distinctive and apart from the communities these kids otherwise would be growing up in.
No, that's right, Rick. And you know, we've been sharing this book with columnists and reviewers and of course, with the principals of these schools themselves. And almost universally, people hate this term, paternalistic. And you understand some of the history of that term, and certainly there have been a lot of terrible things done in the name of paternalism in the past. Whitman talks about a new paternalism that is more benign and positive. But still, people don't like to admit that what we are trying to do is basically do a culture transplant. We're trying to pull these kids out of a culture of poverty and place them into a culture that you might consider to be a middle-class culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has tones of class and race, but this is what these schools have found to be successful if you're going to set kids who do grow up in poverty on a path towards the middle class, towards college, towards being able to integrate into society as a whole.
You know, I mean, this is an interesting conflict. A lot of these people in these schools and running these school organizations are progressives. Mm-hmm. And deeply committed to helping the disadvantaged. The irony here, of course, is that they are making a very determinative value judgment, which is that the values and environments in which these kids are otherwise growing up are not doing well by these kids. This is the very definition of paternalism. And, you know, we need, as an education policy community, to come to terms with that and to think about where we go with it. And the reality is that this moral relativism that we often tend towards, well, we don't want to judge whether these values that we're promoting are better or worse. If one is morally relativistic, it's real hard to drive the kinds of cultures that make these schools successful.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. Whew, I feel like that was a lot of substance for August.
Mm.
You know, I mean, you look around right now in the education world, and there's not a lot of substance right now. There's not a lot of reports coming out, research. You know, Education Week, you can tell they're really trying to scrape to find some things to write about. I feel for them.
We are
talking about some, you know, moral relativism and paternalism.
A substantive show, baby.
Big words.
Boom.
Rick. Big words. Okay. Well, and I do suspect this could be a big fight in the world of academia, the world that you live in. Don't you think? Because don't academics love to fight over these labels? And
Yeah, and all these terms, right? I mean, all these terms are loaded with racial overtones.
Yeah, so that makes it that much more exciting. Okay, it is that time. It is time for our Research Minute.
You search, research, research. It's the Gadfly Research Minute.
Dr. Amber Winkler, welcome to the show. After a stunning performance in the Education Olympics Today video the other day as Dr. Amber von Winkler-Steidenfrud, you're back as yourself here on the podcast.
Never get tired of that doctor, do you, Rick? Just always has such a lovely ring to it.
Mm-hmm.
You should check out Amber's Austrian accent.
Oh,
little French mixed in there. Frankly, a French, Austrian, German, Southern belle. It's all tied up into one.
Always said Amber had a linguistic game.
It was a classic. I don't know why this didn't just shoot to number one on YouTube, but maybe next time. Okay, Amber, you've got 60 seconds to inform us about a recent research report. Go ahead and start.
So we've been hearing a lot about high school dropout rates and all the confusion surrounding that. So we had a study that came out this last month that talked about the fact that we need to be looking at re-enrollment rates, which is something that's been largely neglected in the discussion about high school and graduation dropout rates. It was a study done by WestEd in San Bernardino, California last month. Big finding in a nutshell, they found 35% of students were dropping out at least once during 4 years, 35%. Interesting even more was that 1 in 5 were dropping out multiple times. So these kids were going in and out 2 and 4 times, like high school was basically a revolving door. So we found that there was a lot of instability. The kids were saying that one of the main reasons that they came back was they couldn't find a job. So the takeaway, I think, for all of us who are interested in ed policy is this new NGA rate that we're talking about using in graduating calculations rates. So are we going to be looking at re-enrollment is my big question, because nobody's looking at that or studying that.
Amber Winkler with the Research Minute.
Boom.
Amber, well done. And what is the song this week that goes along with your minute?
The song is Baby Come Back. Do you remember that song? Baby Come Back.
You can blame it all on me.
Baby Come Back.
That's right. And the deal was,
I just can't live without you.
I tried to find Student Come Back. but baby, just, you know, I figured baby come back was close enough to student come back.
Although if you start calling all your students baby and you don't have the right demeanor, you could be a teacher who needs to be told to come back. You know, you know. My takeaway from this research finding, though, is, Amber, that educators need to root for recessions.
Mm. Ah, that's right, because if high schoolers can't find jobs, they'll
apparently
come back.
They're more likely to come back.
I see. Right. That's why we've got this high dropout rate in Clark County, Nevada, right? All these great jobs in the Las Vegas casinos.
But, I mean, kids coming back 4 and 5 times. I mean, it's kind of crazy, you know.
I mean, maybe the school should say, you know what? I'm sorry, we're not desperate for you. You know, if you leave, you know, a couple of times, you can't come back.
All right.
I mean, let's not be so needy.
That works for teens in relationships.
That's right.
You got to be paternalistic, though, I thought. So.
The vision of, well, that's right. A paternalistic parent would say, look, you ran away 3 times. Tell you what, you can sleep in the doghouse the 4th time.
I think 3 strikes and you're out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Amber, with Amber Winkler's Research Minute. It is now that time that we wait for all week long. Education news of the weird time. With our new education news of the weird correspondent, Stafford. Stafford, this is a very exciting role that you're going to be playing for us here. Liam had a long history of bringing us weird things. And let's face it, Liam's a little weird himself. And so it really worked. You're not as weird. So that's going to be a bit of a challenge.
No Liam, no Cooner. It's the end of an era, babe.
It is a bit of the end of an era. That's right. Liam's just been working too hard on these taping days, getting the education gadfly ready. But Stafford is up to it. You know, Stafford went to Yale, one of the nation's best colleges. She did.
In fact, I met Stafford at Yale.
That's right. Rick was responsible for really helping us recruit Stafford and identify her. We appreciate that, Rick.
Hey, and Stafford. So therefore, we've all got a lot riding on you not doing poorly here.
All right, Stafford. Great. So let us know
set the bar high.
What is weird this week, Stafford?
Well, Mike, it looks like we have a little bit of a prostitution problem running through the Midwest. I thought I'd start out with a bang. Come on. So in Ridgeville, Indiana, there's a school board member who was recently arrested in a local prostitution sting. He was caught on tape discussing sexual acts with an undercover police officer, but he was only charged when he asked how much.
Hmm.
Of course, the real kicker, however, is that he cannot seem to make up his mind whether or not he should resign from the board or even discuss his arrest. At a recent board meeting, the offender played dumb, even though the school board president had minutes before made a motion to censure him. These charges won't go away, though, just by ignoring them. Over in Lincoln, Nebraska, a chemistry teacher was caught soliciting sex from an undercover police officer. While paying in advance, he explained to the disguised enforcer of the law that the cash was to help her pay for college. His warm-hearted philanthropy, however, didn't save him from a charge of felony pandering. And that is Education News of the Weird of the Week.
Wow, Stafford, you know, what I like about this is I think this is our first Education News of the Weird to focus on school board members. And school boards are often neglected. That's an issue we're going to start looking into some more here at Fordham. And I like that. We often, you know, talk about principals or teachers or students doing something weird. Why not look at school board members?
And yet, it's not the first time we've talked about sexual peccadillos.
No, it seems like we talk about that all the time. Because that's what's weird about the human condition, it seems like.
Okay.
Let me roll the tape back on that one. So what? What are the rules here? I mean, if you get caught doing something like this as a school board member, are you expected to step down? Are there impeachment trials? I mean, how does this work?
I mean, he's getting pressured to step down, definitely, mostly because of the bad press. But they haven't actually charged this particular gentleman yet. So.
Well, if Larry Craig can stay in the U.S. Senate for another year after his bathroom interlude, I think we're going to have trouble forcing a Ridgeville, Indiana school board member.
But, Rick, don't you think this is yet another reason for mayoral control?
Absolutely.
Except if you're in Detroit.
I can see Mayor Bloomberg bringing up this case in the coming months as they debate that in New York.
Can you see Mayor Kilpatrick in Detroit using this as part of his case for takeover?
This is true. I guess it really cuts both ways. Mm. All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this week. Stafford, thanks for joining us. Excellent job with your inaugural edition of Education News of the Weird. Amber, as always, we enjoy your research minute, and you kept it under a minute this time. And that was huge. That was great. And Kobe, your finger's always on the buzzer. We like that. We appreciate it. Until next week,
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.